So can one or two people shout out one word that they know about Peter?
Rock.
Rock.
Disciple.
Denied.
Denied.
Impetuous.
Impetuous.
A fisherman.
Brother of Andrew.
Extrovert. Okay. Right. Before I read today's Bible passage, I just want to look at a few moments in his life and see if some of those words that you've shouted out kind of sum him up. So here's, I'd like to focus on four amazing statements he made to Jesus and one that he made to a crowd of bystanders. And then we'll look at today's passage. So here's a little snapshot from Luke 5. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets." And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. Can you remember that little bit of the story? Keep that in your mind, because we'll come back to that in a minute. Well, we won't come back to it. There's an echo of it later on. They signaled to their partners in the other boats to come and help them, and they came and filled both the boats that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." So that's the first little snapshot. Peter was confronted, I think, with the awesomeness of God, with the awesomeness of Jesus, this carpenter from Nazareth. And what he did was he fell to his knees. So that's the first little snapshot. Here's another one. Remember that boat of terrified disciples who see Jesus walking on the water? And Peter's response is, "Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." So what does he do? He jumps out the boat and walks on the water. So perhaps that fits in a bit with the impetuous, I don't know. But certainly also willing to step out in faith. Here's another one. Here's Peter. I wonder if he'd ever forget the day when he identified Jesus as the Messiah, as the Christ. Jesus was asking his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And then he said to them, "What about you? Who do you say I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Christ." Okay, so there's Peter again. So he got it. At least some of the time. And then there's some famous words that he blurted out when things started to get confusing. When Jesus talked about death, betrayal, desertion, Peter's heartfelt affirmation of loyalty. Peter said to him, "Even though they all fall away, I will not." And Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he said, "If I must die with you, I'll not deny you." And they all said the same. And then the final little snapshot is Jesus is arrested. He's taken to the high priest's house. Peter follows, waits in the courtyard, and is challenged that he was one of the followers. And he says, "I don't know him." And I guess those words must have resounded over and over in Peter's head. The fisherman who became the disciple, who denied the Lord, and sunk into despair. And today we're going to read from John 21. So if you want to follow, but I am reading from the ESV, so it might be slightly different if you've got the NIV. So we're in John 21. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way: Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We'll go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Any little things ringing bells there from something we heard before? Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. Ringing any bells? That disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place, with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you've just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took bread and gave it to them. Anything? Remind you of anything? Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. I chose the ESV because it clearly points to Jesus making himself known to the disciples, revealing who he was. That word revealed came up several times. And that idea goes back to the theme at the beginning of the gospel. John the Baptist came that the unknown one who stood among the people might be revealed. So it says in chapter 1, this is John speaking, John the Baptist, "I myself did not know him, but for this purpose I came, baptizing with water, that he might be revealed to Israel." And so gospel ends as it begins with Jesus revealing who he is. Now you don't have to answer this question. This is just a question I'm asking you. What do you do when you become overwhelmed? What do you do when life just gets a bit too much? How do you handle that? Do you read a book? Do you cry? Perhaps you don't cry. Maybe you like to go out and surround yourself with people and be in company, as they say. Or perhaps you just like to spend time alone. Perhaps you like to go out running. Or perhaps you like to go and dig the garden over or do something active and vigorous. Well, Peter knew what he needed to do. "I'm going fishing," he said. Fishing was something he knew and something he was comfortable with. Fishing was what he did before he met Jesus. "I'm going fishing," he said. And the others said, "Yeah, we'll come with you." Well, why were they in Galilee at all? Well, actually, they were there because Jesus had asked them to go there. When Peter had said those words, "Oh, no matter what anybody else does, I'll be with you, even to the death, I'll stay with you." Jesus had said, "Oh, yeah, everybody's going to fall away, even you, Peter. But after I've risen, I'll go ahead of you to Galilee, and you must go too." So I'm guessing that they'd gone to Galilee, and then perhaps they got a bit tired of waiting for Jesus. So Peter's actions, I suppose, are a lot of what of us do. I guess he was kind of hiding from the intensity of the emotion, the overwhelming experiences that he'd had, he'd just been part of. He wasn't very comfortable, he was ill at ease with the events. And so he goes back to that place of safety. He leaves behind the strange, the mysterious idea of death and resurrection and all that sort of stuff, and goes back to the familiar, the predictable, the controllable world in his mind of boats, fishing nets, business. Because those were real things, those were comfortable things, those were concrete things, those were practical things, they were understandable. They brought him money, stability, and perhaps some sanity in a world that had been turned upside down. But fishing didn't lead to any fish. The fishing doesn't bring security and safety, only frustration. And although they'd been fishing all night, they caught nothing. Zero, zilch, not a fish. And at dawn, they glimpse this stranger on the shore. And his call to them is, "Go back out and try again." I don't know how you'd feel. I'd probably say, "On your bike, Charlie, I've been at it all night and I've caught no fish." But they didn't say that. He gave them instructions and they put the net down on the right side of the boat and caught lots. They weren't quite sure, I don't think, who this person was, because it says it was a stranger on the shore. And they didn't quite know who it was. But they did it anyway. And of course, there are a number of instances after Jesus' resurrection where people weren't quite sure that it was Jesus. It took a little while to work out that's who it was. For instance, the followers on the road to Emmaus, they weren't quite sure it was Jesus. Mary in the garden, and now these fishermen, they're a bit uncertain just who this is that's calling out to them from the shore, but they do what he says. And we're told that out they go, drop their nets, huge success, 153 fish. And notice that it's John who recognises Jesus. And they again respond very differently, don't they? Recognising the Lord is important, but so is responding. And that's what Peter does. He jumps in again. I suppose when it comes down to it, each of us have lives of faith that will be quite different. And our faith can change over time. Sometimes our faith will ebb and flow with life experiences. Sometimes we'll be reactive, like Peter, jumping in there. Yeah, great, on to the next thing, whatever it is God's got for us. And sometimes we'll be perhaps a little bit more like John. We want to kind of suss it out a little bit first, reflect on it. John rows to shore. He doesn't jump into the water. Someone commenting on this passage said, neither understanding nor action alone constitutes authentic faith. One needs to unite the best of Peter and the best of John if one is to be a person of true faith. So we're going to carry on in John 21 now, and I'd like you to consider a couple of things while we read this next section. Why? That's my first question. Why? Why does Jesus do this, and why does he do it like this? Okay, why does Jesus do this, and why does he do it like this, and what? What does this encounter do for Peter? Be thinking of those things as we read the next verses. So we're back in John 21, and I'm starting at verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who had been reclining at table close to him and had said, Lord, who is it that's going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? Jesus said to him, it is my will that he, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he was not to die, but if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Now there are also many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Okay, so I want you to imagine the scene. Breakfast on the beach with Jesus. Jesus has got breakfast ready for them, providing for them. And like the catch they've taken, he provides the bread and the fish for their meal. He gives them the bread and the fish. To me, that speaks of close fellowship, sharing a meal together. And as I said, there are echoes, I think, throughout this whole passage of different things. There's echoes of feeding of the 5,000. There's echoes of the Passover. Okay, now here's your starter for 10. The word for charcoal fire appears only twice in the New Testament. It appears here in this passage where Jesus cooks the fish. Guess where else it appears? Anybody like to have a guess?
Peter's denial.
Okay? So I think God's amazing. Even the smell of the charcoal fire would have done something in Peter's mind. What? That's James speaking, but that's in my head. Because you see, of course Peter was overjoyed to see Jesus. Didn't he get out the boat? But what else was there? I'm sure there must have been guilt. And yet Jesus is about to do something. Jesus is about to restore and recommission. And Jesus persistently asks Peter some very direct questions about his love. So we're obviously kind of doing Peter's denial in reverse, if you like. But I think there's a lot more going on here than just that. Because I think Jesus is giving Peter opportunities here. Because interestingly, when Jesus rose from the dead, the first message the angel at the empty grave gave was this: go tell his disciples and Peter. But we just said before, Peter was a disciple. But the angel says, go tell his disciples and Peter that he's going before you to Galilee. You see, Jesus doesn't forget Peter. Jesus doesn't ostracize him. He pursues him for restoration. And I think that he's specifically mentioned, because I think in Peter's head, he thought, am I a disciple? I've just blown it so badly. Blown it big time. Can I still be called one of the disciples? Peter didn't just say he didn't know Jesus. If you look at the accounts, he cursed. He called down curses. He swore. It wasn't just, I don't know him. It was a lot deeper, a lot more than that. And when those reports get to the disciples, who's the first to the tomb? Peter. He runs, some accounts say. So I can't help but think that there's something more than just relationship restoration, because a bit of that has happened already. I think there's a lot more here about restoration to ministry or commissioning for ministry here for Peter to do the work that God has in mind for him. And Jesus asks Peter three times, do you love me? Do you love me more than these? So what does that mean? Well, it could mean, do you love me more than these other disciples do? Okay? It could mean, do you love me more than you love these other disciples? Perhaps it could mean, do you love me more than you love fishing? More than you love boats? More than you love the safety and security that you've got here? Do you love me more than success? Do you love me more than everything that you can see? But there's one very specific thing here. Do you love me more than these? Jesus is the specific here. Do you love me more than these? Peter says he loves Jesus, but notice that when Jesus asks him the third time, he's a bit hurt, he's a bit grieved that Jesus asked him the question three times. And three times Peter says, yes, Lord, you know I love you. You know everything. Bit of a change, I think. Not this boastful, even though they all fall away, I'll be with you, Lord, to the end, to the death. He doesn't say that now, does he? He just says, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. You see, what does Jesus know? Well, Jesus knows the things that we know. But perhaps he also knows the things that we don't know about ourselves. And Jesus is gracious. This is not the questioning of an enemy. You know that wonderful phrase, stick the knife in and turn it? Yeah? Sometimes we use that when people use words, don't they? Hurtful words. They know how to stick the knife in and turn it. In other words, they know how to do damage. But that's not why Jesus is asking this. Let's not see it as that. Let's see it, if you like, as the scalpel of the great physician. He's not trying to wound Peter deeper. No, he's offering opportunity for healing, for restoration, to reaffirm his love for him. And Jesus says, I've work for you to do. Feed my sheep, tend my lambs. As painful as this must have been for Peter, at the same time, it was reassuring, I'm sure, to see that Jesus wasn't kicking him out of the 12, but instead he was giving him something to do. Following each of those professions of love, Jesus re-establishes trust with Peter, gives him a fresh task. Peter's called to shepherd Jesus' flock, the young and the old, the weak and the helpless, all of them. I also think, and again, this is me, I also think that in some way Jesus was doing something about Peter's memory. So that instead of remembering three times that he denied the Lord, he actually had the opportunity here to remember three times that he loved the Lord. So that his lasting memory wasn't of denial, but a love of Jesus. Not the guilt and shame of having denied him, but affirmation in his own mind of the forgiveness that Jesus had for him, had offered to him. That's starting again in life and ministry. And Jesus goes on to say that Peter will have the kind of death that Peter will have. That whereas, you know, he had control over where he went and how he dressed and all those things, he won't have that control at the end of his life. So he was telling him, you've got an important job to do, Peter, and do you know what? It's not going to be easy. Not going to be an easy life. Not going to be an easy death. Don't ever think the gospel's hard. What does Jesus say next? Follow me. And that's what it's all about. It's all about following Jesus. Follow me, Jesus says to Peter. So simple, so brilliant. Follow me. And that goes back to the very first time where Jesus met Peter, when Peter's journey started. And I don't know if you noticed, but when I read it, he doesn't call him Peter. He calls him Simon, son of John. Again, I think he's taking him right back to the beginning. Oh yeah, Peter's changed. Of course he has since that first encounter. But I think by confronting Peter's failure, provoking a reaffirmation of love and commitment, Jesus reinstated Peter to leadership and called him to mission and service. I should imagine this was quite a deep soul-searching sort of moment for Peter. And also it demanded that Peter didn't bury himself in his past failures. So all good so far. And then what happens? This is just so typical Peter, isn't it? Hang on a minute. What about him? Takes his eyes off Jesus, changes the topic of conversation, sees John and says, what about him? Lord, what about him? And again, Jesus' reply, this is in James language, mind your own business, Peter. It's nothing to do with you. I've got different plans for different people, Peter. Part of accepting your call is to follow me wherever I lead you. Not where I lead others, but where I'm leading you. Peter just heard a very hard word about what was going to happen to him. And I guess he probably thought, oh, okay, what about the others? Are they going to, you know, be the same? Or what's going to happen to them? Do you do that? Compare, compare, compare. I think sometimes social media cannot be very helpful in that area. I am not on Facebook. But I'm reliably informed that there are lots of pictures of lovely families who look perfect, doing lovely things all the time. And everybody's always beautifully dressed and behaving wonderfully. The children are not having a tantrum. They've not got ice cream all over their face. They've not just been sick. Any of those things. We don't have pictures of those very often, I don't think. But like I say, I'm not on it, so I don't know. But I think we are, if we're not careful, also like that in Christian life. We compare. We measure ourselves in comparisons to others. And comparison can give way to two things. It either gives way to pride, oh, I'm so much better than that, or it gives way to despair. Oh, no, I could never do that or be that. So what does Jesus say? He says to Peter, what's that to you? You follow me. Tom Wright wrote this about this passage. If you are going to do any single solitary thing as a follower and servant of Jesus, this is what it's built on. Somewhere, deep down inside, there is a love for Jesus. And though, goodness knows, you've let him down enough times, he wants to find that love, to give you a chance to express it, to heal the hurts and failures of the past, and give you new work to do. Because you see, if everything starts with our love for God, our love for Jesus, then we get our priorities in the right order. If everything starts with our love for God, then we can face those hard times because we know that we're serving God because we love him. But love for God extends also not just to loving him, but to loving others. And this little exchange between Jesus and Peter kind of gets that into Peter's head. And if you look at his ministry, that's what it was all about later on. His later teachings don't single out people to enter a profession, but call on them and us to embody a lifestyle that isn't afraid of personal sacrifice in serving others. So here's a few questions to ponder. What motivates us to serve? Is it so that we can be judged as successful? Is it for reward? Or is it simply the basic truth that we love God? How often do we retreat from new and challenging forms of ministry to simply remain in the familiar? Because if we're not careful, we stick with the things we know simply because we know them. Our task as followers of Jesus is to remain open to his instructions, open to new ways and methods of carrying out his ministry. If everything starts with our love for God, then our love for those around us will necessarily be in their best interests. Do you love me more than these? Here's something to ponder. What are your these? Do you love me more than these? Is it time to stop comparing and just listen to those words of Jesus? Follow me. And finally, perhaps you think that you failed, but don't let your perceived failure stop you from doing what God wants you to do, what God is calling you to do.